hard for me in the, you know, living.
Hey, True Seeker. Well, we are getting close to selling. That's why, you know, there might be gremlins in the machinery here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains as we do the program. Good evening. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Novam Radio Network. Welcome to the program. I don't know what that was. A bush. But, you know, Bush trying to talk again. Jesus. It's weird. We only have one soundbite tonight. We'll play for you a little bit later. It's of Rush, Death by Temptation, Limbaugh. Who, like a lot of right-wingers in media right now, are just going completely off their meds. Completely. What do we got tonight? Well, we have a few things. I want to devote a little time here at the beginning of the program to the Pete Stark controversy. Why not? You know, that's it's such great fun to see the moral outrage of these right-wing killers in the House and the Senate and in media. Whenever somebody in the Democratic Party makes a true statement about Bush's war and Bush's disrespect and contempt for the United States military and Bush's actual fun at knowing people are dying. I agree with Pete Stark. Bush gets some sort of a kick out of the war in Iraq or Afghanistan or Iran or whatever the hell. I'm sure he gets a kick out of knowing that people in the occupied territories in Palestine are being blown to pieces. Bush is a psychopath. Bush comes from that branch of the Republican Party that loves death. They are pro-death. So why, whenever somebody makes a statement like Pete Stark did, does everybody get so surprised? Well, the reason they get outraged is because the truth, the sole purpose of the right wing in this country, the fascist right, whether it's in media, mainstream media, talk radio, newspapers, cable, the television, sludge fest, wherever it is, the main function of the right wing in this country is to suppress the truth. And anytime someone happens to blurt it out, in a very descriptive manner, the hyenas, the jackals, fall on him or her in a matter of seconds. Look what they did to Cindy Sheehan. A woman whose son was murdered by George Bush. George Bush is a killer. Only he is a psychopathic killer. You know, why is it a surprise? This is a guy who giggled and chuckled about the execution of the woman in Texas. What was her name? Yeah, Carla Faye Tucker. Oh, save me. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. He's a psychopath. So whenever the truth comes out, people go bananas, right? We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to my favorite talk show host, radio talk show host, was on with Chris Matthews this afternoon here in the East. And I've never seen Chris Matthews so nonplussed in my life. We'll have that in a second, too. From Suzanne in L.A., though, we got an email here. Good evening, Mike, and happy Friday. Good news just keeps coming in our efforts to reelect Al Gore. Every time I go out in Los Angeles County to collect signatures to place his name on the California primary ballot, there are always a couple of people who ask for extra copies because they know other people who will sign. We need 500 signatures from 53 counties, and we're going to do it in time for our February 5th primary. Please encourage people to go to democracyforamerica.com. That's Howard Dean's spinoff website, democracyforamerica.com, and take the Pulse poll. Al Gore is running a razor edge second to John Edwards with over 42,000 votes cast. The question that's at the Pulse poll: if you could vote today for President of the United States, who would you vote for? This particular poll will be going on for some time, but Democracy for America will likely endorse whomever wins. And we know what workhorses the Democracy for America-ers are. Thanks so much, Suzanne in L.A. Okay, so there you go. Go to go to democracyforamerica.com if you're so inclined. Take the poll. And if you're in California and you'd like to see Al Gore's name on the ballot, of course, you know, in a broader sense, it doesn't need to be on the ballot. It can be a write-in, but. There's a big but. There's always a big but, isn't there? Here's the big but. When you see someone's name on the ballot, you're more inclined to vote than if you, you know, you've been told by people who love this country, write in the name. Write in Dennis Kucinich or Al Gore. Kucinich will be on the ballot, but write in the name, you know? It's easier if you see the name. So keep it lit for Al Gore. This is from Craig in Minnesota, who's kind of pissed off at me and a lot of people. He says, the subject line is no more turning away. He says, I listen via podcast, and so I'm usually 24 hours behind. But I assume the 5-1 lead held and that your listeners will not allow you to participate in the national strike on November 6th. He's talking about the poll we did last night. And then he goes on, just another example of why there will never be a revolution in this country. Oh, yes, sir, I'll gladly take a day off work in order to send a message. I'll use a vacation day or maybe call in sick. Then I'll brag about having been on strike. But don't inconvenience me by denying me my nice and cozy few hours with the radio show in the evening. Quotes around all that. What a bunch of crap, Craig writes. Frankly, Americans are way too soft and lazy to sacrifice or do whatever it takes to overthrow this corrupt government. We are doomed to continue our slide into fascism, and frankly, we deserve it. You play a lot of Pink Floyd as bumper music. Last night you used On the Turning Away. Obviously, most of your audience has never listened to the lyrics, which include, it is not enough just to stand and stare. Is it only a dream that there will be no more turning away? Well, Craig, I don't know what to tell you. We try not to be fascist or totalitarian on this program, and I think that's what we were trying to do, is demonstrate a non-fascist attitude. You may have misunderstood the intent. Most of the people who voted will, in some way or another, I'm sure, do something on November 6th, Election Day, that will fulfill their desire and their ability to strike. The question put to them was, would it be more effective to have me on the air that night or not? And I said I would go whichever way the audience wanted. There is something different, and there is. I'm sorry, there is. Whether you like it or not, Craig, and there's no indication in your email whether you do or don't, so that's just a rhetorical slap on the knuckles on my part. But there is something different about doing a media a radio program that is live in real time. I will guarantee you that day I will not buy anything. That's a Tuesday. I will not fill up my gas tank or go to the store or go buy a couch for the living room or whatever. You know, I'll just stay my ass at home, play with my kid, and at 9 o'clock Eastern, probably go on the air. Let's see how the voting goes. But I don't know. There was just something in your email that was kind of prickly there, Craig. Of course, I do that a lot in the program, too. So, Jack writes in, good evening, Mike. I was going through the channels this evening and noticed that the bodacious Stephanie Miller was on Hardball. You might have seen it. I did. And you're probably aware the talk of the show was the comment Representative Pete Stark made about Bush and this illegal Iraq war, at which point Ms. Miller called Chris Matthews a right-wing tool. You should have seen the look on Matthews' face. I did. Unbelievable. I can't stand the guy because he is indeed a right-wing tool. And I used to pal around with his younger brother, Charlie, who was a decent guy. Signed, Jack. Yeah, as a matter of fact, after I saw that, I was here in the studio, and I went upstairs and got on the phone and called Stephanie. And, I've got her phone number. And I called Stephanie, and I said, hey, Steph, it's Malloy. She said, who? Mike Malloy. Long pause. Oh, hey, Mike! I said, I just saw you on Chris Matthews. Way to go. She said, "Well, I was kind of kidding, but I've been on the MSNBC seat before. You can't really see Chris Matthews' face. If you get a chance to look at the video, you got to look at it because he looked like somebody had just, I don't know, just given him an enema or threatened to or something. But it was an amazing look on his face. And so anyway, I just said to Stephanie, way to go, girl. Way to get Chris Matthews' attention. And she didn't say anything nasty. I mean, everybody's on television with the exception, perhaps, of the exception of Keith Olbermann and perhaps a couple more, our right-wing tools. We all know that. Jesus, I mean, what's the big deal? She should have followed up by saying, oh, by the way, Chris, water's wet. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Who made me judge and judge? 21 past the hour. I love it when Stephanie goes after some of these people. She does it in a very effective way because she uses humor. And she's got a great smile, whereas I have a scowl, and that's why I don't do television anymore. Of course, I haven't been invited for a long time, not since the last time I was on MSNBC, and the anchor woman got a little bit pissed off, I guess, about where the conversation went. But Stephanie has that great smile, and just you never see the razor come out, and you never realize she's cut your throat until you try to hiccup. I think it's wonderful. I love her. She's my favorite talk show host, by the way. My favorite of all time. Is that right, or have I said that about somebody else, Kathy? No, I think Stephanie's my favorite of all time. What Pete Stark said is, you don't have money to fund the war on children. He said this on the floor of the House. You don't have money to fund the war or children, but you're going to spend it to blow up innocent people. If we can get enough kids to grow old enough for you to send to Iraq to get their heads blown off for the president's amusement. What's wrong with that? It was Bush, the evil psychopathic son of a bitch, who at one of the White House correspondence dinners made a videotape looking for the weapons of mass destruction. Oh, it was great fun. It was a real laugh riot, wasn't it? Are they under here? And the camera would come back to him with his deadpan Jack Benny look. Are they over here? Where are those darned old weapons of mass destruction? Tell you what, Chuckle Nuts, maybe you could dig up at the time the 2,000 or so dead Americans and ask them whether or not they appreciated your humor. Or the hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqis. You sick son of a bitch. So when Pete Stark makes a comment like he made, it's absolutely right on the money. Bush is a psychopath. Read Bush on the couch. He is a crazy man. And as far as the president's amusement, of course it is. That doesn't mean Bush sits back on his pretzely ass and laughs every time he gets a casualty report. Pete Stark wasn't saying that. But Bush is amused at all the damage and hell and death and destruction he can cause by just sitting back and waving his hand like some king. As far as the last four words being a little over the top for the president's amusement, no, it's not over the top. It's a bullseye. Now, CNN ran a poll. 88%, I believe it's up to 90% now, people agreed with Pete Stark. You see, people are angry and fed up. And we're upset, I think, to realize that this filthy amusing little event of George Bush's is costing us $12 billion a month, money that could be spent for, let me think real hard, child health care? There's a poll at crooksandliars.com you can take. But the right wing just went absolutely bonkers, didn't they? And I love that. Oh, my God, I love to see people like John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the rest of these lying bastards just get so upset when somebody drags out a great big club of truth and just kneecaps them, right? Just bludgeons them with the truth. And, you know, they fall to their knees all bloody, and they stand up and say, Pete Stark ought to apologize. Oh, yeah, okay. Pete Stark said, I'm just amazed that the Republicans are worried that we can't pay for an insuring an additional 10 million children. They sure don't care about finding $200 billion to fight the illegal war in Iraq. Pete Stark also said, President Bush's statement about children's health shouldn't be taken any more seriously than his lies about the war in Iraq. The truth is that Bush just likes to blow things up in Iraq, in the United States, and in Congress. Well, where is Pete Stark saying something that's not true? Where? Stark issued a follow-up statement. I have nothing but respect for our brave men and women in uniform and wish them the very best, but I respect neither the commander-in-chief who keeps them in harm's way nor the chicken hawks in Congress who vote to deny children health care. Good for you, Pete. Keep it up. There's a poll at Crooks and Liars. 99%. Of the people, 99% say he should not apologize. Apologize? Jesus. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made it very clear, though, how she feels about Pete Stark's comments, huh? Huh? She says what Pete Stark said was inappropriate. Inappropriate. Pelosi issued a statement this evening going after Stark. By the way, Stark is in his 18th term representing the East Bay area of California. He's California's longest-serving House member. Pelosi's statement said, while members of Congress are passionate about their views, what Congressman Stark said during the debate was inappropriate and distracted from the seriousness of the subject at hand, providing health care for America's children. You know, Nancy, I'm getting goddamn tired of you and your statements and your undermining a decent Democrats and your inactivity and your cowardice. You know, I'm getting real tired of you, Miss Pelosi. That's what bombs were invented for, so you can blow stuff up. Let's blow something up. When all else fails, let's blow something up.
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour from Jack. You know, it's a shame, Mike, that we live in a time when the corporate-owned media in what was once the greatest country on the face of the planet allows its president, a usurping, bellicose cardboard cowboy, to come onto the airwaves and mock the very same weapons of mass destruction which he and his pernicious cabal used to start this illegal and horrific war in Iraq. And yet when Representative Stark comes out speaking truth to power denouncing this unjust war, he is castigated by the very same reticent corporate media. If we are to save this once great republic of ours, it's imperative that this type of media buy a stop. Well, Jack, it's only going to get worse. You know, it's only going to get worse. I'm afraid. Nancy Pelosi, who is really starting to irritate the hell out of me. Now, I know I'm coming late to that party. A lot of you have gotten through the hors d'oeuvres and in the main course, and I'm still at the front door. But she issued a statement saying that what Pete Stark said during the debate was inappropriate and distracted from the seriousness of the subject at hand, providing health care for America's children. Does Pelosi not understand that all of these issues are linked? that there's no such thing as a separate, discrete issue like children's health care, while this psychopathic bastard sits in the White House and continues to poison the Middle East with weapons of mass destruction, depleted uranium, while he continues to plot further wars. He doesn't give a damn about children's health care. Well, what is it with Pelosi? What is it with the Republican leadership that every chance they get, they come to the defense of these killers? Even at the expense of a straightforward comment by a representative like Pete Stark, who has been in Congress a hell of a lot longer than Nancy Pelosi. Stark said the truth. You don't have money to fund the war or children, but you're going to spend it to blow up innocent people if we can get enough kids to grow old enough for you to send to Iraq to get their heads blown off for the president's amusement. And then after a lot of Republicans started asking or demanding or threatening that Stark better apologize, he more or less gave him the middle finger and said it was they who should be apologizing for failing to provide the votes to override Bush's veto. But you see how the issue's lost now, right? The issue's lost. And damn you, Nancy. Damn you, Nancy Pelosi. I was so excited when you took that gavel from the boner boy in Ohio. When you took that gavel, and all of a sudden, here you are, making history, right? Yay! First female speaker of the House of Representatives, a Democrat. Yay! You've been a miserable failure to me. Do you know that? Just to me and, oh, maybe 10, 15, 20 million Americans who just busted their asses to get you into that position. And now, just event after event, you come out, Ms. Pelosi, with the apologia when a Democrat makes a clear statement about this filthy bastard in the White House. How dare you? Oh, well. Jim in Endwell, New York writes, Mike, do you think we can clone Pete Stark about 1,000 times? What the hell is wrong with Pelosi and the Democrats? I don't know. I have no idea, Jim, except they are... They are the shades of these Republicans. That's pretty much all they are. And again, CNN is reporting, or was reporting this on their Friday morning online poll, 88% of those voting said there was no reason for Stark to apologize. And, of course, House Minority Leader, Ohio's thug John Boehner, quickly issued a statement, demanding a retraction and apology. And part of the response across the country was generated by a thread at Democratic Underground. The thread asked members to DU this CNN poll, you know, go vote. But the thread also expressed amusement that the sentiment in favor of Stark was already running at 87% to 13%. but I think that the folks at Democratic Underground, you know, they got the word out.
Oh, you mean they conspired to make the poll look a lot better for Stark than it would have, huh? That's a typical Democrat thing to do.
Yeah. You're right. This is from Raw Story. It says the lopsided result of the CNN poll is striking, especially since the mainstream consensus seems to be that even if Stark was just shooting his mouth off, as he has many times in the past, he may have crossed a line of bad taste in suggesting that the president actively enjoys seeing American soldiers' heads blown off. For example, when Keith Olbermann indicated on his program that he felt there was, quote, something refreshing about his at least refusal to back down, end quote, guest Jonathan Alter responded that Stark's comments were, quote, silly and counterproductive, and the best thing for him to do would be to apologize and move on, end quote. Oh, Alterman, bite me. What do you mean, apologize? God. Yeah, Pete Stark. Pete Stark has a mouth on him. Thank God he does. Thank God he does. He's one that suggested several years ago that opponents of gun control were phallically challenged. Everybody knows that. Jesus, I mean, come on.
I've got a little wee-wee, so I want a big gun.
And another example of Republican ugliness is Steve King, the Republican from Iowa, who introduced a new name for the acronym S-CHIP. And we talked about this last night. It's socialized Clinton-style Hillary care for illegals and their parents. Another ass. And, you know, I said last night, how can people in Iowa send this useless chunk of DNA to Washington? Well, I got an answer here from Lori. Is that who this is from? Let me see here. Let me make sure. Yeah, I think it's from Lori. Lori writes, Dear Mike, I'm just listening to the podcast of last night's broadcast, and I had to respond to your question, how can you people in Iowa put a subhuman like King into office to represent you? I've lived here for 4 years now, and I've tried mightily to get this guy defeated, but they love him here. They think this latest obscenity is the funniest thing they've heard in weeks. It's a very conservative, very rural, very fundamentalist Christian district, Dutch Reformed. Ooh. Steve King's also the guy that made a joke at the state Republican convention last year. He quipped that if Al-Qaeda suicide bombers were to make it to paradise, the only virgins they would find would look like Helen Thomas. Nice, huh? And I'd given up writing him. My attempts to ask about his votes only generate letters that drip with smug self-satisfaction as he informs the ignorant likes of people like me that he and the president know what they're doing and they're going to keep me safe even if I don't deserve it. Well, if anyone wants to help get this guy tossed, they should consider visiting the website of his Democratic challenger, Ron Hubler. H-U-B-L-E-R. I'm sorry, Rob Hubler. His website is hublerforcongress.com. I believe it's hublerforcongress.com. If not, you can find it. And she signs it, Lori, ashamed to be living in Redneck, Iowa. If anyone wants to help get this guy tossed, visit the website of his Democratic challenger, Rob Hubler, and make a contribution if you're so moved. I've contributed to and will be volunteering for his campaign. Now, she has down the website is www.hublercongress.com, but I think Lori means Hubler for Congress. I think. Hubler for Congress, F-O-R. So check it out. Especially you Democratic Underground people. Democratic Underground, I don't know if they ever realize how much power they have, but you got the power to bring in Mr. Hubler some bucks, too. And again, we're not talking about big contributions here. Get a million people that go to DU to send Hubler a buck. How much is that? Let me see. One times one. That's $1 million. What else? All right, we have a couple more things. We're going to do a lot of phone calls tonight. So you folks that are getting online now, I will be coming to your phone calls earlier than I normally do. There was an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here on the opinion page today, and I never stopped to consider this. Al Gore is the third Baptist, Southern Baptist, well, Baptist, to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Jimmy Carter in 2002, Martin Luther King Jr. in 1964, Al Gore in 2007. And the op-ed piece, how is it that three sons of the Bible Belt have each won the world's most prestigious award for their advancement of human rights, peacemaking, and now earth care? Now, that's an interesting question for an atheistic bastard like me, and I'll try to answer it when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Except, of course, for the high death rate. Abortions wrong, capital punishment.
10 before the hour. Kathy writes in, it really is HublerCongress.com. There's no F-O-R. Hubler, H-U-B-L-E-R, Congress.com. Check out his website. Go ahead, check it out. There's another website I want you to check out. Well, it's Friday. What the hell? Another one I want you to check out. Just got an email from Jerry at ImpeachBushCards.com. He's the guy that provided us with the decks of cards that we sent out, oh, I don't know, a year or so ago, modeled on the, maybe it was longer than that, I guess it was a couple, 3 years ago, modeled on the deck of cards that some wag in the Pentagon put out there to capture, the Saddam's gang. And Jerry came up with a deck of Most Wanted in the Bush Crime Family. Well, he's got a new one. Go to his website. Check these out. Some of these are really good. ImpeachBushCards.com. ImpeachBushCards.com. I was just there during the break. Funny stuff. Funny stuff. And again, it's Hubler Congress. .com. Check this guy out, too. All right? What else we got? Oh, yeah. Back to three Baptists now have won the Nobel Peace Prize from here in the South. Op-ed piece in today's Journal Constitution asks the question, how is it three sons of the Bible Belt have each won the world's most prestigious award for their advancement of human rights? That would be a king, peacemaking, Jimmy Carter, and Earth Care, that would be Al Gore. In a June 2006 interview before the Nashville premiere of the documentary Inconvenient Truth, Gore, this is written by Robert Parham, who wrote the op-ed piece for the AJC, Gore told me that his Christian faith shaped his moral convictions about the environment. Gore said, quote, I was taught in Sunday school about the purpose of life. I didn't ever get a single lesson about the purpose of life at Harvard or the prep school I went to, but I learned about the purpose of life in Sunday school, and I was taught that the purpose of life is to glorify God. How can you glorify God while heaping contempt and destruction on God's creation? The answer is that you cannot. You cannot. End quote. Al Gore. Now, of course, then there's Jimmy Carter, who still teaches a Sunday school class at the Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia. The church there even posts Carter's Bible study schedule in the program and gives instructions about when visitors should arrive. And then, of course, there's Martin Luther King, son of a Baptist preacher, who you can bet your bottom dollar attended Sunday school every week. And as a preacher himself, the Bible was central to his message. You know, we did some Bible last night, didn't we, huh? King's Nobel Peace Prize came a year after his letter from Birmingham jail that was addressed to eight white Birmingham clergymen who said his actions for civil rights were, quote, unwise and untimely, end quote. One of the clergymen who signed that was the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Birmingham, a congregation that later split over integration. Ain't gonna have no Negroes come and worship our Lord and Savior. No, ain't gonna have that. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Negroes or something. The Southern Baptist fundamentalists damned Martin Luther King as a troublemaker, a race mixer, a liberal. And most white Baptist leaders refused to honor him for his award and offered little lament when he was murdered. But, you know, the whole Southern Baptist Convention is because they didn't want to sully their worship of their white Jesus and their white God by having black folks sit in church with them on Sunday morning. So they split away from the Baptist family and formed the Southern Baptist Convention, which was set up as a racist organization. Can you imagine how happy that must have made Jesus? Huh? I bet Jesus just wandered around heaven that day when the Southern Baptist Convention just drinking the sacramental wine and saying to God, can you believe this? Now, ironically, the Southern Baptist Convention's news service, Baptist Press, didn't even carry a news article about Carter winning the Nobel Prize. And that failure was accompanied by a thundering silence across the editorial pages of Baptist state newspapers. And since then, Southern Baptist Convention leaders and their news service never pass up an opportunity to criticize Carter. They hate real Christians. Southern Baptist Convention is a sad, nasty-ass collection of racists who think they're worshiping Jesus, and they're not. Jesus is sitting up there, I'm sure, wherever he's sitting, up there, down there, over there. You know, just looking at these thugs going, man, you know, when they die and come in front of me, I'm going to do what Malloy said. I'm going to rip all their heads off and urinate in their necks, and then I'm going to cast them into hell. Man. Gore has experienced his share of rejection from his fellow white Baptists. One Southern Baptist Convention agency had called Gore's global warming documentary a crockumentary.
Oh, damn, that's funny! A crockumentary! You mean it was a crock? Yeah, I get it.
Jesus, so to speak. News stories in prominent newspapers the past week or so about the Nobel Peace Prize have omitted references to the moral foundation of Gore's commitment. It's Gore's morality. There's nothing for me to challenge there. Gore says he got his moral sense of structure and balance from Sunday school. Okay, from Baptist Sunday school. Okay. But these articles don't talk about his commitment to the Baptist faith or Protestantism or Christianity or Jesus. They don't dare, these Southern Baptists, because if they do point out the basis on which Gore says he comes to these conclusions, it points out the emptiness of the Southern Baptist Convention members. All 8 million of them, or 10, I don't know how many there are, but there's enough that when they all go to hell, it might, you know, it might cause the commodes down there to back up a bit. There's an awful lot of Southern Baptists who are going to burn in hell. We all know that. And didn't the Bible say something about no prophet is accepted in his own country? Huh? So here we have three Baptists from the South who have received great honor, global recognition of their efforts for humankind. And the Baptists here in the South that are going to hell can't even say their names without being contemptuous. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. The other day when Bush had his latest press conference, he answered a reporter's question by saying something about how difficult it would be to be the number 2 person for Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or number 3 person, because you'd be either dead or captured or something like that. Well, there must be an awful lot of number 2s and number 3s over there. Somebody compiled a list, and I don't know where this comes from. I know who sent it to me. There are 39 number 2s and number 3s who have been captured or killed. You want to hear some? Hamad Juma'a Farid al-Sa'idi, also known as Abu Humam, also known as Abu Rana. He was Al-Qaeda in Iraq's second most senior member. Mansour Suleiman al-Mashhadani, that's Zarqawi's right-hand man. Mohammed Hila Hamad Obaidi, said to have close ties to Abu Musad al-Zarqawi. Abu al-Farouk, previously unknown top aide. Bilal Mahmoud Awad Shiba, also known as Abu Abaida. He's the gatekeeper and courier and confidant of Zarqawi. Ali Firas Muntar al-Dalami, also known as Abu Abdallah, highly regarded by top Al-Qaeda in Iraq leaders, including the group's chief, Jordanian Abu Masab al-Zarqawi. And then we have Abu Azam, the number 2 official in the Al-Qaeda in Iraq organization and the top deputy to al-Zarqawi. Then there's Mohammed Salah Sutton, also known as Abu Zubair, a lieutenant of Al-Qaeda terror boss al-Zarqawi. Then there's Abu Abd al-Aziz, who is Zarqawi's main leader in Baghdad. Then there's Khalid Suleiman Darwish, also known as Abu al-Qad'iya, a Syrian dentist, was described by Arab media as the number two in Iraq's al-Qaeda network and tipped to succeed its leader, Abu al-Zarqawi. Then there's Mohammed Khalaf Shakar, also known as Abu Talha, top lieutenant of terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Then there's Mullah Mahdi, also known as Abu Abdah Rahman, who is a suspected deputy of terrorist leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Then we have Abu Karar. The Washington Post quoted a Zarqawi lieutenant by the nom de guerre of Abu Karar saying the Jordanian militant was shot and wounded in fighting with U.S. forces near the western city of Ramadi. Then there's Mullah Kamal al-Asawadi, described as one of al-Zarqawi's top lieutenants. Then there is Aga Umar, a top aide to al-Zarqawi. Then there's Amar Adnan Muhammad Hamza al-Zubaydi, also known as Abu al-Abbas, a high-ranking aide to terrorist leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Then there's Hassan Muhammad Amin Hussein al-Rawi, who is described as a key associate of Iraq's most wanted militant, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Then there is Hamza Ali Ahmad al-Dimizar, also known as Abu Majid, who is described as a Zarqawi associate. Salman Aref Abukadir al-Zardoui, also known as Abu Sharif, who's also known as a Zarqawi associate. And there's Typhoor Abu Sattar Malala, one of the princes of Abu al-Zarqawi's terrorist group. I can't go on. There's 39 of them. Okay. And the list, I've got the list in front of me. It's four pages. These are all people who've been killed or captured and who have been identified as the number two or number three man for al-Qaeda in Iraq. Jesus God. Why am I laughing? I'm laughing at the insidious insanity of the Bush crime family. Let's get this Rush Limbaugh piece of waste off my desk here, Kathy. Let's play the soundbite. Have you got it? All right, this is Rush Death by Temptation Limbaugh from this Monday's broadcast. He proves his pet the pony therapy failed to cure him. Remember that? He came back from his drug addiction where he sent his, whatever happened to his cleaning woman who used to go score drugs for him in the parking lot of, was it Target? Huh? Denny's? Denny's, that's right. And he ran into therapy like all these cowardly sons of bitches do. Not that there's anything wrong. I mean, if you're a drug addict, of course you're supposed to get in therapy. Save your ass. But Limbaugh is just a joke. So he took therapy and came out and talked about how he got to pet a pony and it had a profound effect on him. Obviously, the pet the pony theory therapy failed to cure him of his many dangerous addictions. In his admission of how he threatened a journalist and his children, When this reporter dared to report the truth about Limbaugh, or getting ready to report the truth, what you don't hear in this clip is his mad ravings about an organization of progressive journalists called ProPublica. It's that organization that spawned his confession, on-air confession, about his threats and verbal abuse of this journalist who was writing about him. What a lunatic. What an absolute filthy lunatic. All right, you ditto heads who listen to this program, listen up. Here's your mouth-dribbling, foam-flecking leader.
Who are these people that get to act as though they are sin-free, that they are clean and pure as the wind-driven snow, that they got no skeletons in their closet, they can go out and dig up dirt on, and everybody's got dirt, they can go out and dig whatever up, and then they can slant it and taint it, smear it, yeah, lie about it, do whatever they want, and nobody examines who these people are. And if you try...
Yeah.
They get met. Well, we're journalists. We're immune. We can't treat us the way we treat other people. I've had journalists tell me this. Why are you immune to the same kind of destructive reporting and behavior that you dish out? You know, I've practiced it once. I'm not going to tell you the story because I don't want to give it away. but there was a cover story on me coming out of one of the big news magazines, and it was going to totally mischaracterize me and what I do and how I do it. Yeah. And we found out who was writing it and made a couple phone calls to the person writing it.
Yeah.
And we said, you know what? We're going to find out where your kids go to school. We're going to find out who you knocked up in high school. We're going to find out what drugs you used. We're going to find out where you go to drink and do. We're going to find out how you paid for your house. We're going to do what we're going to do exact, and we're going to say that, you know what? You are no different than Al Goldstein. You both masturbate. Look, a guy started screaming on the phone. Just went. You can't do that. We said, watch us. And it changed the tone of the story by about 60%, I would say, from what it was going to be.
Wow. Gee, Rush, proud day for you, huh, you piece of human waste? You threatened to bully the journalists into distorting the real truth about your worthless ass. Good on you. Darren Kagan must be so glad she's as far from your cystic butt right now as she can get. I never could figure that out. Darren Kagan at CNN hanging out with this chunk of phlegm. He says, I'm not going to tell you. You know, I'm not going to tell you the story because I don't want to give it away. Maybe the story was about the Viagra you were caught with when you were coming back from the Dominican Republic and you had no prescription for Viagra, but you knew you were going to go down there to bugger children. And even for you, Rush, it might be a little bit difficult to get an erection when you have a naked child in front of you. Huh? You think? Or maybe it was doctor shopping down there for your narcotics. You know how easy it is to walk into a pharmacia in the Latin-speaking countries, right, Rush? You just order stuff off the shelf, right? Maybe it was a story about blowing your ocular nerve from your Vicodin abuse. Huh? Shoeboxes of little blues delivered to your housekeeper in a Denny's parking lot. Come on, Rush, fess up. Which story was it that you threatened the reporter's children about, you scum sucker? And you know the weird thing? He sounds just like Ed Schultz. He does. He does, his voice. I'm talking about his voice. Okay. You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. When the lights go out, I get him. I swear to God, I get him. Okay. What else we got here? Oh, I know. Right after the break, Margaret Kimberly wrote something. It was posted at commondreams.org, titled Nancy Pelosi, Public Enemy Number One. And I just want to share something with you and ask you if you agree. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
I wonder what Rush is using now. I really do. I notice he's bloated up again. Vicodin or OxyContin will certainly slim you out because, you know, you don't have any appetite. But Limbaugh is bigger now than I think I've ever seen him in a publicity shot. And he's just huge. Just huge, isn't he? Well, maybe he'll forget to take his blood pressure medicine someday and just...
Well, I'll tell you what it...
You think? David, in talking about the all the number twos and number threes, guys who have been killed over and over and over again and captured and yada yada, David writes in, Mike, remember how they killed Chemical Ali 6 or 7 times and eventually captured him alive and then put him on trial and then sentenced him to death? Yeah, I do. Pelosi. Apparently, the other day, Pelosi said about people who were demonstrating in front of her house, she said, if they were poor and they were sleeping on my sidewalk, they would be arrested for loitering. But because they have impeached Bush across their chest, it's the First Amendment. Margaret Kimberly, writing at Common Dream, says the Democratic Speaker of the House would like to arrest activists for loitering. Her Quisling-like behavior has led protesters to her front door in San Francisco, but she has only herself to blame for the inconveniences she and her rich neighbors now suffer. The great unwashed masses have a right to assemble at her home, her office, or anywhere else they choose in order to exercise what is left of the right to speak freely. Her own words show her level of contempt for the democratic process. It is clear that Nancy Pelosi's reign as Speaker has been an absolute disaster for the Democratic Party and for the entire nation. Her eagerness to cooperate with the Bush regime is matched only by her incompetence in leading Congress. Under her watch, Congress gave Alberto Gonzalez, on his way to riding out of town on a rail, a significant victory by expanding FISA regulations to allow warrantless surveillance of American citizens. The story of FISA debacle has been blamed on Bush. It is true that he once again lied about a terror threat, but it's not true that Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats were innocently stampeded. The Democrats had every intention of caving from the very beginning. Pelosi and the rest of the leadership promised the ACLU and other civil liberties groups that they would not pass a bill without first investigating the extent of White House lawbreaking and without consulting them, the ACLU and other civil liberties groups, first. They did no such thing. As an ACLU lobbyist put it, quote, they turned around and screwed us over and the Constitution all at once, end quote. Nancy Pelosi now has stated publicly what she thinks of us, the citizens of this country. We are an irritant to be tolerated, not people with rights that must be respected. Pelosi is an omen. A warning that acceptance of Democrat Party actions is the first step on the road to political hell. It is a lesson that must be learned now before President Hillary Clinton takes office. The fix is definitely in for Clinton to win the Democratic Party nomination. The Democratic candidate's fundraising prowess versus Republicans is a sign that the big money political donors of both parties are all betting on the Democratic horse. Clinton's ascension to the throne, now reserved for family dynasties, should not be accepted as an absolute victory. Pelosi, Harry Reid, and the rest of what passes for congressional leadership have perfected their criminal enterprise. Every act of treachery is followed by lame excuses for inaction. The truly spineless ones, progressives, wallowing in denial, foolishly whine, asking each other what is wrong when the answer stares them in the face. The Democratic Party is complicit in killing democracy. Activists must begin making demands. They must demand impeachment. They must demand that New Orleans be rebuilt. They must demand no further funding for occupation in Iraq or for a new war in Iran. Pelosi and her co-conspirators must be called out as the backstabbers that they are. Only then will democracy have any chance of being restored. Now, I've edited, taken out a few paragraphs. Margaret Kimberly is an editor and senior columnist at the Black Agenda Report. She's a good writer. Do you agree? Do you agree with her? Do you agree with this? You can find this at Common Dreams. It was up yesterday. Just look for Margaret Kimberly. And the title is Nancy Pelosi, Public Enemy Number One. That's pretty strong rhetoric, but is it not true? There's nothing like betrayal. You know what I'm saying? Nothing. You know, I know my enemy. Oh, I know my enemy. I know what an evil son of a bitch every single Republican in this country really is, especially the ones in elective office. I understand my enemy. I know my enemy. I know how to defend myself against my enemy. It's the people who claim to be my political friends that scare the hell out of me. The people for whom I did my part, my little part, in the last congressional election, based on the assumption that in doing my little part, my little desire for an end to the Bush crime family activities against the people and the Constitution of this country would be carried out. by the leadership. And what have they done since they've been in? They've authorized more war. They've authorized more phone tapping. And they're about to authorize further consolidation of what remains of communications in this country. This is madness. You know, it is madness, and it really pisses me off. Thanks, Nancy.
Get away from me, American woman. Mama, let me be. Go, gotta get away, gotta get away now. Go, go, go. I'm gonna leave you, woman. Gotta leave you, woman.
Your host for a Peance Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls here, starting with Bob the Poet, who is calling in from Tennessee. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I'm getting by. You know, Mike, with the pleasant echo of Dennis Kucinich's words saying that when the White House keys change hands, Bush and his accomplices should be turned over to the law officers.
Yep.
Immediately. Yeah. And with the echoes of today's stark remarks,
I feel a poem coming on.
Well, with the smell of Limburger cheese in the air, I brought you a snapshot and shout out.
Okay.
Here's the snapshot. Lame duck and boil butt. Preen and strut. Shuck and jive, dodge and dive into the flood of human blood and fetid gore their dreadful war produces. This induces ugly smirks, corporate perks, and gleeful cries, then satisfies sadistic needs. Oil butt feeds like vampires suck, while lame duck cycles down the path of demons' wrath and hell on earth. Here's the shout out. Midwife, the birth of people's power. Nurture the flower of resistance. Our deliverance is in our hands. It will be bands of brothers and sisters, united resistors, who will end this madness. We must redress these monstrous crimes. Jefferson said, sometimes the tree of liberty must be nourished, friend. To the Hague we'll send lame duck. Ditto boil butt. He's out of luck.
All right, Bob.
Just a rhyme.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, Bob. Take care. Take care. Bob has a way with words. Dr. Dave is calling from Ventura, California, listening on the Internet. Dr. Dave, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Actually, it's Venice.
Oh, okay. Venice.
That's okay.
Okay.
Same state, though. Yeah.
Well, there's a big difference, though. Venice is a bunch of hippies. Ventura is a bunch of rich people, right?
Yes. And I represent... I represent the... the aforementioned stereotype, and following the as a beatnik, I would never read a poem on the air because I thought it would be against the rules. It would never occur to me. And I, as a guest in your on your program,
we have one poet who is attached to the program. We have many musicians,
right?
We have one poet. We have a couple of insane people, and
you have one more insane person if you include me.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
yeah. and a tromboner.
A tromboner.
Yes, as opposed to a trombonist.
Yeah, I got you.
All right.
All right.
But no, the main reason I should say, since this is the first time I've talked to you since you've returned from your voyage, I should say avast ye swabby.
Thank you. That's real good. Or you can say
sort of corny, but
you should say this: arg mateys.
Arg matey. Well, that's the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. There
sure.
You go.
I wasn't sure which one to pick. But
the arg works.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
That one never goes out of style. The main thing that got me today is all this talk about my man Pete Stark. And by the way, he's been my man, not my congressman, because I don't live in his district. But and I don't know if he's actually the dean of the California delegate anymore. Yeah, because I remember Don Edwards used to be, and he was a great, you know, progressive Democrat.
And, no, this guy is now the longest serving member of the California delegation.
Right. He was elected the year that the Democrats nominated their last great nominee, George S. McGovern.
There you go.
And he's gotten in trouble lots of times because of his mouth.
Uh-huh.
And every time he does, I dig in more.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
And so I'm digging in more, too. And here I am. He's getting. Well, I'm not listening to too much of the Knuckle Dragon networks, but
right.
Except for sometimes on the commercials, I'll switch over. But here I'm hearing these Democrats attacking one of their own. You know, if they'd save some of their venom for man or monkey,
and they're attacking him for telling the damn truth. You know,
yeah.
I don't have any problem with Democrats attacking Democrats. That's supposed to be what...
Well, I attack Democrats from the left
right.
all the time.
Absolutely. But they're attacking Pete Stark because he tells the truth.
Yeah, the thing is, they're playing the business-as-usual game, which is that the game we're playing, like it's a game, is that George Bush is not a sociopath or a psychopath, which is pretty much the same thing. He's not wrong in the head. That's the game they're playing.
Yeah.
And Stark calls him on the game. And, of course, Pelosi, who used to be my erstwhile congresswoman, used to be a good liberal, and now she might as well join either the DLC or the GOP. I don't know.
Well, you know what they say, power corrupts.
Yeah, they say it, and it looks like she's determined to prove that axiom correct. She looks like a perpetually scared, hyperthyroid mouse with no whiskers.
Well, somebody told me that that's actually the Botox. I don't know about that.
And I take thyroid myself, so I guess I can. It's okay to make thyroid jokes.
There you go. Yeah.
But and I hate to tell you this, but I have trouble with Stephanie Miller. Because she plays it safe down the middle a lot, and
she spent an
hour attacking Pete Stark today. I had to turn her off, as I always do. I turned her on because she was on after Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!,
right.
And I just can't handle it for the hour. And she spent a whole time doing Fox's. It's funny that she would attack Chris Matthews as a right-wing tool when she was doing the hatchet job herself this morning. But that's
so much of what Stephanie does is satire. Or was she being serious? She was being serious,
Mike,
huh?
I know the difference.
Okay, well, send her an email and tell her her best friend in the radio business, and we don't have friends in the radio business. Nobody has friends. But
right.
Her best friend in the radio business, Mike Malloy, says he's pissed off because she said something. I don't know. I didn't hear the program. Stephanie is on the air when here in the East, I'm just going to bed. So, because there's like 7 hours difference.
Yeah. And I didn't see you on a hard ball because, of course, I can't stand Matthews anymore.
Yeah.
Before I close, I would like to say one final thing about your musical selections from, I think it was before. Oh, by the way, Sam Cedar, a great choice as always.
Uh-huh.
Love Sam. Can't go wrong with Sam.
That's true.
But I wanted to say something about your choice of, you played some Kindertotenlieder by Gustav Mahler last time.
That's right.
And I thought, all right, Mike's getting into some of the Austro-Hungarian Romantic stuff.
Yeah.
Way to go. And then you said, I could never get into Mahler. Mike, you have got to trip out on find some acid and play his second or third symphony. And,
wait, I'm writing this down. Find
two or three hits of some fairly decent acid. And it's second or third symphony. The second symphony has chorus. If you don't like the choral stuff, the third one is largely instrumental. It's huge orchestra, and it is cosmic. It is the universe writ large.
Hold on just a second. Give me the ice pick. All right, I'll do that. But I'll tell you who I like better than Mahler. I like Carl Orff. Anytime I really want to do something insane and crazy, I'll just listen to a lot of Carl Orff. And for the next week, I'll be walking around bumping into trees and talking to the neighborhood dogs and stuff like that.
Okay. Did I cause the ice pick, by the way?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. All right, listen, Dave, I got a boogie. Thanks, Dr. Dave. I appreciate you checking in. Appreciate you. I don't know why I don't care that much for Mahler. I really don't. And I know there's a lot of Mahler fans out there, like Dr. Dave. So, you know, please don't get pissed off at me. I'm sorry. I like Carl Orff because, you know, his music, even though it's not intended to sound insane. And I saw a live production one time of Carmina Burana, and it was about, was that before we went to Chicago or when we came back? So when we came back, so it was about 7 years ago, and I'm still not right. I still have not gotten my head screwed back on from watching a live production of Carmina Burana. Especially the production I saw started out with all the people impaled on the stage. Oh, my God. Or was that the Alberto Gonzalez hearings? Well, something. So, Dr. Dave, no, I appreciate your respect for Gustav. I really do. Under different circumstances, okay. But I'm just hung up on Carl Orff right now. I have been for some time. I just, wait, what's that I hear? What is that? Do I hear music? Oh, my God.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Back to your phone calls. let me see who is our next victim. Martin is listening in Cleveland, Ohio, on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Martin.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Well, pretty good, pretty good. So, Nancy Pelosi and so many elected Democratic representatives who are just joined the choir for Bush. Whatever he wants, they give him.
Sure seems that way.
Well, I think there's a very insidious history to that. So many years ago, Hegel presented for the kings or minority who want to rule a large majority of people, he codified the old divide and rule game that the British and the Romans and everybody else have used, basically where you create your own opposition and you put on a spectacle for the people. It's called democracy. We'll pretend you have a choice. We'll pretend you have freedom to choose who you want to represent you, and you have a hand in guiding your own destiny. Uh-huh. It's a scam. It's a total scam. There's no democracy in this country. This is a one-party show. There's no free press who's checking it. There's simply the propaganda arm of the ruling elite. And very interestingly, there was a book published back in the 50s by a leading member of the Hungarian Communist Party. His name was Dan Kovacs, and his book was called And Not a Shot Was Fired, and the subtitle was basically How to Subvert a Democracy Without Violence.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, first of all, he expressed that the way that it was done in Russia really doesn't work. It's incredibly exhausting to rule the people by force. Mm-hmm. It kills their productivity and so on and so forth. Said, here's how you do it. It's very scary because it looks like America today. First of all, you give them a fake sense of choice. Secondly, you utterly intoxicate them, whether it's loads of beer, loads of medications, you know, for everything that could possibly go wrong, loads of bullshit entertainment, mm-hmm. You know, however many...
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but you can't say that word. Martin, was that Martin? Was that Martin? Yeah. But I appreciate what you had to say, Martin. The thing to do is get the thought together and call us again. only honest to God, I know you listen on Sirius satellite radio, and any program that originates at Sirius, since it's cable, so to speak, satellite, but it's like cable television, you don't have to be careful of language, as you can hear on Sirius or XM, for that matter, and because it's subscription radio. But my program originates as a over-the-air broadcast event, and consequently, it is regulated by this corrupt, filthy FCC. And the last thing my tiny little network needs right now is a massive fine for using one of the seven words that somebody has deemed shan't be used on over-the-air broadcasting. And you said one of them. So we have no choice. I'm sorry, Martin. Was his name Martin? I think it was Martin. So we have no choice but to cut the call. And I know that gets confusing for people who only listen to Sirius or only listen to XM, who may have the impression that this program originates as a Sirius or an XM or a satellite radio program, which it does not. And I also understand in the heat of the moment, because I do it myself, I don't say that little select list of words, even though I'd like to. Oh, would I like to! And if I were employed strictly by Sirius, I would. But I'm not, so I don't. Okay? No offense, Martin. It's okay. Just next time you call in, I do hope you call again. Just be aware there's certain words you can't use. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington, listening on KPTK. Hey, Scott.
You know, all I have to say about Little Miss Nancy Pepsi Olsey is that I hope that Cindy Sheehan beats her and beats the hell out of her.
That's going to be interesting. Do you know how that campaign is coming along? I mean, is Cindy Sheehan?
You know something. I got something very interesting for you that's kind of tied into that.
Okay.
Now, guess who's considering running as a Green Party candidate for president?
I know her name's on the ballot, Cynthia McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And she was kind of speaking with Cindy Sheehan, and she is in support of her. So, you know, it looks like she does have a lot of support out there. And, you know, and I wouldn't put it past, you know, anything can happen. Just like, you know, when Patty Murray mm-hmm. got elected the first time for senator up here in Washington. And I remember her campaign because she was dubbed as the mom in tennis shoes. And
yeah.
She and unseated a long time incumbent. I can't even remember what his name was, because that was over 15 years ago. But she has a lot of support out there. And I suspect that she could probably get the money to run. So, anything could run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, this is just proof of, you know, this is DLC brand of Democrats that, you know, I'm sick and tired of. I'm tired of this kind of useless stuff. It's worthless.
Yeah. You know, I don't feel necessarily that Nancy Pelosi or any member of the Democratic Party leadership around this Pete Stark issue, they don't have to come out and say, yeah, we support Pete Stark. All they have to do is just shut up. You know, let Pete Stark's statement stand on its own. And why Pelosi or anybody has to come out and say, well, now, wait a minute, why not just shut up and let the statement stand? Pete Stark can handle his own defense. Pete Stark can handle whatever these right-wing pissants throw at him. And I don't think, you know, like I say, it's one thing to not, if Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to say that sort of thing, fine. But when Pete Stark does, hey, Nancy, just sit down and shut up. That's all I have to do. Thanks, Scott. We got a boogie. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. A couple of emails and back to your phone calls here. This is from Rich in Minneapolis. He writes, Mike, your caller who said Stephanie attacked Pete Stark for an hour did not listen to her show. She repeated many times that she stood behind him and his actions, except for one word, amusement. They had to keep taking calls and repeating they did not attack Representative Stark. They just wish he hadn't given an angle for the conservatives to use. You can still love Stephanie. Nice to hear Orify sold jazz and classical music for 13 years until that industry collapsed on itself. Rich in Minneapolis. And Ron writes, hey, Malloy, I keep thinking about back in the 50s when that senator was finally getting in Joe McCarthy's face and telling him, have you no decency, sir? Have you no sense of shame? Now we have hundreds of Joe McCarthy's in Washington, D.C., and thus we have hundreds of opportunities every day to get in a Joseph McCarthy's face and say, have you no decency, have you no sense of shame? And not only are our Democrats in the halls of power not doing this, but when one of them actually has the temerity to actually do what they all should be doing, what we all desperately want them to do, they berate him for doing it. I just don't get it, Malloy, but I swear to God, I'm seriously considering voting green in the next election. These wimpy, spineless Democrats better learn they're in danger of losing their base. Ron, P.S. I like Orff, too, but Mahler's Resurrection Symphony is the greatest music I've ever heard in my life. It's 80 minutes of heavenly bliss. Thanks, everybody. Back to your phone calls. Clayton is calling for from Massachusetts, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Clayton.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. I've been listening. I have satellite for a long time, right? And this is the first time I came across your show by accident one night. I can't believe the stuff you say. You know, I mean, I think it's great. You know, I just love you to death. But my wife, she doesn't do anything with politics. But when I put you on, she says, put that guy on again, you know? You know, because we love you. But, you know, I can't understand why can't they get anything done? You know, it drives me crazy because I put on my satellite in the morning and I hear, oh, the bill failed, you know, that they didn't get enough votes. I mean, what are they thinking? When's anyone ever going to stand up to this guy?
I know. I don't know. I wish I did know, but I hear what you're saying.
You know, it just drives me crazy, you know, and I listen to your show, and it's like, you know, the callers that call in, I hear some of them, they say the same thing, you know, they talk to a friend, and it's like, I talk to my friend, he lives in Georgia, I say, why do people vote against their own best interests? I don't understand it.
I know. That's the book, What's the Matter with Kansas, and I'm drawing a blank on the author's name, but it came out about a year or two ago. Oh, damn. Somebody will send it to me. If you want to try to understand that particular mindset, Clayton, you need to read the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? It's about how Republicans in that state constantly and consistently vote against their own best self-interest. And it's a mystery to me. I just don't get it. I mean, it's one thing to be ignorant. Ignorance is curable. But it's something else, again, to be just brain dead stupid and to continue to allow people politically to just make mincemeat out of our lives. And that's what the Republicans and some Democrats do. But to constantly, blindly continue to put Republicans in office who have no interest whatsoever in how America lives or what's best for the greatest numbers of us. They're only interested in the religious fanatics in the top 1 or 2% in terms of income, and the rest of us can go straight to hell. So I could never understand Reagan Democrats, for example, Democrats who found Reagan so attractive back in 79-80, they voted for him. But anyway, if you get a chance, get that book, What's the Matter with Kansas, and you will get some insight into that question, okay?
Okay. By the way, you're the best talk show host I've ever listened to.
Well, that's very, very kind, Clayton. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, I just appreciate you saying that. That's very nice. I don't claim that at all. But Janie is calling from California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Janie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Janie from the ship.
Yeah. Oh, Janie from the ship. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey. Have you stopped rocking yet? Do you feel like you're back on solid ground yet?
Oh, well, I got right in the truck, and so I'm bouncing all over the place.
Oh, that's true. You're still bouncing.
Oh yeah. Mike, this whole situation has got me. I've never been so elated and so angry and frustrated all at the same time.
Yeah.
When I heard what he said, I just wanted to whoop. You know, yeah. it's like we've been stuck in a room with the air sucked out of it, and it's stifling hot, and we put Congress in there, these people in there, to open the door and give us a chance.
Right.
And they've just refused. And now this guy turns around, and he flings the windows open. It's like a breath of fresh air.
I know.
And they want to close the windows back. And if we allow them to do that, if we do not get behind this man in every way, any oddball, creative way we can, put a sign in our windows and call the people that are going are asking for an apology and tell them to knock it off, then if they close those windows back, who is going to have the courage to open them up again?
That's right. That's right. It's a good point.
It's just not going to happen. This is our chance. This is a chance that we've been waiting for. We finally got somebody that has stepped forward and is talking for us and doing the right thing. And we need to not just talk to each other and say, yeah, that was great. We need to take action and make sure that we continue to go forward, because this might be our only chance. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. I'm listening to you.
Okay, I'm traveling, so I didn't know if I lost you.
No. You loud and clear. Loud and clear, Janie. No, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. Absolutely. Anytime somebody like a Pete Stark steps up and calls a swine, you can't, if you're the leadership of that party. Like I said a minute ago, all you have to do is shut up. Let Pete Stark handle his. If he stirs up a hornet's nest, he can handle it. Let him handle the right wing thugs who are then going to attack him. Nancy Pelosi doesn't have to pile on, right?
Right. Well, I thought Cindy Sheehan was absolutely nuts when she was talking about getting rid of Pelosi. I'm thinking, if you want to get rid of somebody, why don't you go find a Republican and get rid of them? But now I see what she was talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
She knows what she was talking about. And this woman has just got to go. And, that's about all that you can say about it.
It is indeed. Janie, thanks for checking in. Drive safely, okay?
Oh, I will. And say hi to Kathy and give Molly a hug.
I'll do it. Thanks, Janie. Take care. Thomas Frank is the author. Thanks, John. I should know that. My God. Yeah. So much of the stuff that people have to email me is stuff I should know, but I don't. Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas? That's the book to read. Josh is calling from New Mexico, listening also on Sirius. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going good. How about you?
Pretty good. Do you remember me calling a few nights ago? Truck driver?
Oh, yes, sir. Sure, I remember.
Hey, I just heard about your vote. How's that coming along?
It's remained pretty consistent in insisting that I stay on the air on the 6th of November, election night, and if nothing else, keep track of whatever kind of a protest is registered that day. So it looks like that's what I'm going to do. Hey, hold on a second. I got to put you on hold. Josh, we'll come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, that's me. 21 past the hour. We're talking with Josh in New Mexico. All right, where were we, Josh?
Well, I was getting ready to touch on a few points. I know they're completely off the topic of tonight.
That's right. We really don't have a topic tonight, so go ahead.
Okay. About the November 6th thing, I wanted to let you know, I support you if you decide to go ahead and stay, you know, and do your show. And I think that'd actually be a great idea. I was against it at first. But, you know, as far as I can see right now, this thing is actually spreading more than I thought it was. I mean, you know, I haven't seen that list that I had told you about that had a little over 3,200 names on it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since then. But I do know that it's spreading because, like, every 3 out of 5 truck stops I've stopped at, actually have newsworthy graffiti in the stalls, you know, mm-hmm. talking about the 11-6-07 one-day strike and things of that nature.
Right, right.
So, anyway, what I was going to say, I wanted to tell something to the truckers out there, if there's any listening. I'm sure there are.
Uh-huh.
Whether you are right-wing or left-wing or you just don't care, whether you hate Bush and you want to protest him, or whether you're just sick of the fuel prices, you know, then paying $3 and some, you know, mm-hmm. almost up to $4 a gallon in places,
right.
You know, this could be a universal one-day strike. I mean, you know, imagine how confused the media would be, you know, if nobody tells what they're striking for, if there are people all over the place striking for different things just on the same day.
Yeah.
Imagine how confused they're going to be when they're trying to report it. They're going to be like, well, don't really know why they're doing this.
Right. That is kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to be a truck driver to be, you know, pissed off about the price of gasoline, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I just wanted to let you know I support you. And if you're a truck driver out there, if you're a company driver, dude, you're not going to get in trouble, or you may get a slap on the wrist, but you're not going to get fired if you're late to your appointment, you know, because you say that you're sick for a day. I'm going to be sick on the 6th. And if you're an owner-operator, well, you ought to be just really pissed off about the fuel prices and just shut down anyway. I mean, come on. It's not going to hurt you that bad.
Yeah, I certainly hear what you're saying. Josh, listen, thanks. I, as always, I appreciate your input. Take care. Take care. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm really annoyed. I'm really annoyed.
Oh, my goodness. About what?
Oh, well, let's see. Nancy Pelosi.
Oh.
I'm annoyed that the invertebrate wing of the Democratic Party consistently sides with the bullies whenever somebody with a backbone stands up to them.
Isn't that infuriating?
And it didn't even Harry Reid. What Harry Reid yesterday going against Chris Dodd's hold?
Yeah. Oh, really?
On the bill. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. With friends, who needs enemies? I mean, who are they afraid of? Who are they trying to avoid offending? Rush Limbaugh's listeners? Rush Limbaugh's listeners aren't going to vote for them anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe if they stood up, they'd get people who've just dropped out of the system to go and vote.
Well,
isn't there a whole, 50% of America that just doesn't vote at all?
Mm-hmm. In a lot of instances, it's, sometimes more than that. I just wish that when a Democrat makes a statement like that, like Pete Stark did, a powerful, strong statement that contains within it a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of truth, if the Democratic Party leadership would just shut up, like I said, just let the man, Pete Stark, can take care of himself. I think he's in his, he's in his 70s? He can handle himself. He's been around. He knows what the deal is in the House. He knows how to handle himself. And he also knows what his heart is telling him. And when you see that honest, genuine rage and frustration, I just don't believe that's time to sit back and say, but on the other hand, on Pete Stark's behalf, or for somebody like Nancy Pelosi to attack him. In any way, just sit down, Madam Speaker, and shut up. Pete can take care of himself.
How many abhorrent things have Republicans said on the floor of the House and Senate? Do you remember it was about 2 years ago when John Cornyn stood up and said, yeah, I can understand why people kill judges?
I remember.
And nothing? Was he ever, where was the, was he ever forced to apologize?
Against
what he said?
No, the Republicans said, yep, I understand what he's saying. He's right. He's absolutely right. Hell yeah. It's insane, Paula. Hey, listen, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, and what Pete Stark said was true. There was nothing untrue about what he said, and amusement was the most appropriate word.
It was the most, it was the least inflammatory and the most appropriate. You're absolutely right. Thanks, Paula.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Appreciate you checking in. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and finish up the program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We haven't talked about the nomination of Judge McCasey to be the new Attorney General, and probably won't get into it tonight, but I got an email here from James in Seattle who writes, Mike, listening to the testimony before Congress of that lowlife McCasey, who refuses to say that waterboarding is torture, reminded me that such a practice, namely the drowning, then resuscitation of one's victim repeatedly, is not an uncommon, monstrous procedure utilized by serial killers over the past three decades. Ted Bundy comes to mind, readily to mind, although there have been others as well. Bundy used this torture method on several of his victims, whom he eventually tortured to death over a 13 to 16 day period. Bundy was given positive press just prior to his execution by that half-wit, Dr. Dobson, the family values scumbag. Dobson apparently appeared to be quite comfortable around Bundy, giving him exposure because Bundy claimed pornography made him do it. Waterboarding seems to fit the sociopathic personality. The scariest fact over the past 7 years is not the horrendous events of 9/11, but that this pervert Mukasey actually ever served as a judge. Again, unbelievable, but all too common during this Bush crime family reign. Eric Haney, a co-founder of Delta Force, U.S. Special Forces Detachment Delta, said it best during an interview several years ago, quote, "The only reason that Cheney and Bush use torture is that they enjoy torture," end quote. James in Seattle. In other words, they find it amusing. Back to your phone calls. Darren is calling from Olympia, Washington, listening on the internet. Hey, Darren, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling to see if you ever get a senator on there, one that voted against the SCHIP program, you might want to ask them, how is it they're okay with receiving health care for their entire family when they make $160,000 a year? And if I'm not mistaken, that's socialized medicine.
Yeah. well,
they receive from the taxpayer.
I guess that's a good definition. To answer the first part of your question, it's very, 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 very seldom that I have a politician on this program, because in 22 years of doing talk radio, I have found out that for the most part, I can't handle it. I just can't, because if I get one of these guys on, now there are a couple of exceptions. Kucinich was Cynthia McKinney. I've had people on who were honest, would answer the questions, whether I wanted a specific answer or not, they were willing to give it. But most of the politicians, and I would never come anywhere near a Republican, so we're talking about Democrats here. Most of the Democrats that I've talked to in attempting to interview, it just never, I just couldn't get past the empty rhetoric.
Right, they just
that they put out there, because they're all afraid that if they say something that is the least bit controversial, that somebody's going to snatch that sound and turn it into an attack ad against them. So I don't completely fault them. I fault the system. But I very seldom, Darren, have politicians on, because they're terrified. They're afraid of their own shadows. They're afraid to do anything. But you're right about the health care. It's a good point.
It's just that of all the things that I can think of, in my mind, that socialized systems are something that's paid for in part almost entirely by the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is your fire department, your police, your school systems,
right,
your national parks, your roads and highways, your military. I mean, they all enjoy socialized medicine,
mm-hmm,
of sorts. I mean,
well, somebody made the point, made it well, and I forget who it was. Several people made the point that, you know, when Bush is talking about, well, if we fund SCHIP to the extent that the Democrats want it funded, then people are going to leave the private system and get on the public system. And of course, he leaves out a couple of salient facts. Number one, people who have the SCHIP program pay a premium. They also make a copay. This is not free medicine by any means. The only free medicine, if you can call it free, is Medicaid. And people who are really at somehow find themselves at the bottom of the economic ladder in this country can apply for and obtain Medicaid. So the SCHIP program is not about free. It's about low-cost guaranteed medical insurance for children and a few adults who also need it. But the point that was made is simply this. We have two systems of education in this country. We have public education that is paid for with tax money, and then we have private schools that is paid for with tuition. And so many people who could, in fact, afford private tuition do instead send their children to a public school. So do we penalize them? See, it's insane. Any argument that a right-winger or a Republican or a conservative makes against making sure our children have insurance, any argument they make against that is an argument of somebody who is absolute squirrely, right, chattering nuts.
Right. When it comes to health care, well, I figure the costs always come full circle, and somebody's got to pay. It's like a couple months ago I had a kidney stone. I knew what I was going into the hospital for, into the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
My side was hurting. I've had a kidney stone before, mm-hmm, but I had to go to the emergency room. I have good health care, but I only spent a couple hours in there, and all I really wanted was the shot for the pain.
Right.
I got a CAT scan, which was okay. That was $1,300. But in the end, for those couple hours, which amounted to a CAT scan and a couple of shots,
uh-huh,
couple of pills,
right,
was $3,000.
Right.
Now, I know that I'm paying for those who can't pay for it.
Right.
And for those insurance companies who aren't willing to cough it up.
Right.
Because they're trying to make a buck.
Well, Bush is the one who said it. He said that poor people and or poor children in this country already have health insurance. It's called the emergency room. You know, what an unconscionable, heartless, bastardly thing to say. To say that a little kid who's suffering should go to an emergency room and sit there and wait his or her turn, eventually that cost is absorbed somehow, either by the hospital or by the county taxpayers within which that hospital sits. Somehow it's eventually absorbed. Why not have a system of national health care that guarantees every... Oh, God, here I go again. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I know. I understand what you're saying, Darren. So yeah. How are you feeling now? You okay now?
Oh, yeah. That was a couple months ago.
Oh,
but,
okay.
No.
All right. Well, take care, okay? I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, remember when Bush said that? They can go to an emergency room. You son of a bitch. You unconscionable, just rotten human being. Would you send your kid to an emergency? No, of course not. Huh? Oh, God. Oh! Jamie is calling from Portland, Oregon, listening via Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going fine. How are you?
Not bad. You know, about this S-chip thing, children's health care in this country is a right, not a privilege. It's
sure.
A right, not a privilege.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on. This is not a political thing at all.
Mm-hmm. it shouldn't.
Know,
I think what you mean is it shouldn't be.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the founding fathers, I mean, come on. This is what America's based on, that we can support everybody, at least a little in terms of health care, what it is. But I think, you know, this will go through. This is going to go through and... You know, it's going to happen. If it takes a little time, whatever, it's going to happen. But I think the point is all of these Congress members, and obviously Bush, who voted against it, I think it, you know, really, I'm getting echoes of Katrina here. I mean, come on. This
yeah.
is this is complete lack of morality in any sense at all. You know, these people have spent their entire lives with, you know, one purpose in mind, making as much money as they possibly can.
Right.
Separating themselves from everybody they possibly can,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this makes it really clear where these people want to go and where they want to take this country. I know, like you said before, you know, they can't fully enforce fascism all at once. They have to do it step by step.
Sure.
And this is one of the steps, and, you know, this is a huge red flag. Not that everything else isn't. This is a big one. You know, so, maybe a more positive note. If the Democrats can retain Congress, retain the control in Senate, and win over the presidency in 2008, could we possibly get Election Day on that? Declares a national holiday.
It should be.
Come on. I
yeah.
mean, if, you know, we've put up with so much with these Republicans, if we can, you know, obviously end the war in Iraq, end it.
Right.
And make voting day a national holiday. Come on, there's no argument against it on either side.
I hear you, Jamie. And in addition, I think voting should be handled over a three-day period, like a weekend. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 10 before the hour. Those are the days, huh? Ron in Briarwood, New York writes, Hi, Mike. All Representative Stark has to do is hold a press conference and play the tape from the White House Correspondents' Dinner of Bush doing his comedy routine about looking for weapons of mass destruction under his desk or over there, over there. The Washington correspondents in the audience were amused by it. Bush was amused by it. This war amuses him. It's on tape, goddammit! Ron writes. When Representative Stark said amusement, he used exactly the right word. Our troops died, and Bush was amused. Yeah. There is nothing, and I said this at the beginning of the program, there is nothing in what Stark said that is not essentially true. And because Nancy Pelosi gets her bloomers in a wad over the use of the word amusement, you know, that to me, again, is beyond belief. Sometimes it would seem to me the best political way of handling this, if it needs to be handled, I frankly think that another 100 to 150 a Democratic representative should have said amen and amen. We second exactly what Pete Stark said. The son of a bitch in the Oval Office is insane. Of course he enjoys it, or finds it amusing. Of course he finds it amusing. You know what else he finds amusing? The destruction of the Constitution that Bush referred to as that goddamn piece of paper, end quote. He finds that amusing. And he finds amusing the destruction of regulatory agencies. And he finds amusing the fact that oil is going to hit $100 a barrel before the year is over. He finds all of this amusing. He finds it amusing when people used to petition him desperately for mercy when he was the governor of Texas before they would be executed. It's all amusing to this frat boy coked out freak. So for Nancy Pelosi to think that she's taking Pete Stark to the woodshed over his use of the word amusing indicates, as far as I'm concerned, Nancy Pelosi's inability to understand or care about what's really happening here. Yeah, everybody got a big chuckle out of it. Where did they play that tape today? I guess it was on MSNBC at one point. From that White House Correspondents' Dinner. I even remember thinking at the time, what the... This is funny? Didn't he have, at some point in that video, didn't he have his dog looking for them? And people died? And the country was invaded because that son of a bitch found it amusing? And Pete Stark points out the obvious. And again, one expects these right-wing subhumans in media to jump on Pete Stark? Of course. That's what they do. They are scum. They're filth. They're like the ring in a bathtub after about 80 people have taken a shower. No, not at my house. But for Nancy Pelosi or any Democrat to comment on what Pete Stark said other than to support him is well, typically Democratic Party leadership in these times, huh? What a commentary on Democratic Party leadership in these times. Thanks to our usual gang of bandits here, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and handled your phone calls, Billy Foster. Chris in Minnesota, who's our senior correspondent, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Thanks, everybody, for another week of amusement. Huh? We're just about out of time, but let's see if we can get another call before we call it a night. Wait, who is that? Marge? Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hi there. I'll try and make it fast. You're running out of time. Yeah. I wanted to check and see if you were familiar with a book called Blackwater, written by a Jeremy. My screen was a little snowy. I don't know if it's Scahill or Scahill.
Scahill. I'm familiar with the book. Haven't read it. I mean, I'm familiar with it. I've heard the title and the author, yes.
Yeah, well, Bill Moyer tonight on his journal spent an hour talking to him. If there's any way you can access that through pbs.org, by all means, do.
Okay.
This, what he has to say is scarier than hell. You know, these right-wing beggars are going to privatize the whole damn government if they can.
It won't happen.
I don't know. Did you hear this? But one of the things that he said that right after Katrina, that Blackwater was in New Orleans with 180 men, and he was charging the government $950 per man per day to the U.S. taxpayers.
Sure.
While they're yelling at these poor people that are spending $2,000 on their debit card.
All Republicans are thieves. It's just a matter of degrees. The higher up the food chain you get with Republicans, the more vicious and thieving and corrupt.
I can't find words to describe these people.
I know.
I mean, you know, I like you. I don't want to be cut off your air, and anything I can say would just be.
I know. Marge, I got to go. Thanks.
Take care.
All right. Have a good weekend, Marge. Thanks for hanging out this week and tonight. I'll see you Monday night. Okay, take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kenny, wherever you are.